to order. Carrie, could you do roll call, please?
Yes, Chair Dubrava.
Here.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Regent Carter. Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Here.
Thank you. Regent.
Here.
Regent Hayes.
Here.
Thank you. Regent Levine.
Here.
Regent McAdoo.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Page. Regent Page.
He's there. You can see him.
Yes. Thank you. Regent Perkins. Regent Trachok.
Present.
You have a quorum present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Carrie. I see many of us are up in the Crowley Student Union. I would ask Regent Geddes, if there's a flag, if you could lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance up there, please.
If you would all please rise and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. We will first go into public comment. Carrie, do we have public comment, please?
I'm sorry, I was not unmuted. The first comment is from Thomas Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, president of the Nevada Cattlemen's Association. Agriculture has a significant impact on the economy of Nevada, especially in rural areas. Ag dollars turn over in the communities they are earned in more than any other sector. Livestock production represents the largest segment of agriculture in this state, and the Nevada Cattlemen's Association serves to promote a dynamic and profitable Nevada beef industry. Our membership has made it clear that the future of our industry depends on an advanced curriculum of higher education focused on agriculture specific to Nevada. Our vision of what that should look like is this. We ask that the University of Nevada, Reno fulfill its land-grant university mission by maintaining and enhancing research and education based on the needs of producers in the state. The University of Nevada, Reno's RANGE program is unparalleled in the world and should continue their important research and education on issues that impact all residents of the state, such as wild land fire and invasive plants that fuel them, range management and monitoring with respect to public lands, carbon sequestration on range lands, and grazing management to promote all of the above. Beef cattle production in Nevada comes with its own unique challenges, and it's imperative that research and education continue and expand to mitigate those challenges. Cooperative Extension plays a vital role in outreach, education, and continuing education of producers, youth, and the general public. Continuing education is not solely for cattlemen, but for all user groups of Nevada's rangelands, and is crucial to conserving its ever-changing ecology. 4-H is an important part of rural life, as it's often the only opportunity for extracurricular activities for rural children. For nearly a century, the University of Nevada Land Grant Systems Cooperative Extension, in cooperation with local volunteers and community leaders, has managed and coordinated the development of rural youth through the traditional 4-H program. 4-H's focus on at-risk and urban youth is crucial as it can bridge the divide between urban life and agriculture, but it should not come at the cost of loss of programming and needs for rural youth. Activities such as county fairs are community events that play a vital role in the culmination of traditional 4-H projects and the youth development process. Any major changes slash decisions to such an important program should be cooperative decisions involving all stakeholders. The Nevada Cattlemen's Association feels strongly that state and local cooperative extension administration and faculty should seek out and include local stakeholders' input rather than exclude them from tough decisions being made to the 4-H program. We hope that our feedback will be given due consideration and hope that we will be able to work more closely on all of these issues that impact our state. The next comment is from Lori Navarrete, Navarrete. Welcome, Chancellor Melody Rose. We look forward to your leadership in ENSHE and ongoing communication with you, the Board of Regents, and the Nevada Faculty Alliance chapters. We encourage you and the Budget Reduction Committee to protect faculty lines in the upcoming budget cut discussions. Several nearly identical statements were received from the following individuals who identified as either a student, faculty, staff, alumni, or concerned citizen. Adriano Cabral, C-A-B-R-A-L. Riley McKinney, M-C-K-I-N-N-E-Y. Jesse Spooner, S-P-O-O-N-E-R. Ryan Corrigan, C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N. Logan McKinney, M-C-K-I-N-N-E-Y. Bailey Falk, F-A-L-K. Elizabeth Mason, M-A-S-O-N. Hannah Walkinshaw, W-A-L-K-I-N-S-H-A-W. Abby Rosen, R-O-S-E-N. And Stephen Zipkin, Z-I-P-K-I-N. Mr. Chair, I will read the statement into the record, and their comments will be included in the permanent meeting file. Former Governor Brian Sandoval has no business being elected president of UNR. He quit his job in April knowing this position would be handed to him. He has no experience in higher education, and the committee's recommendation of Brian over the other candidates, all three of whom hold positions in higher education, is highly suspect. Brian has actively voted to cut arts and mathematics programs at our university. To trust him to lead our institution during a time of ongoing crisis would be an absolute mistake. Let me also offer, outside of the online public comment form, that a deadline for submitting public comments on September 15th/16th by 4 p.m., when we were not made aware of this decision until late on the 16th, by a public news outlet and not by our institutional leadership, is terribly reminiscent of silencing strategies structured in an effort to prevent the public from expressing their concerns about this decision. Hiring Brian Sandoval to the position of president of UNR would be a mistake detrimental to the future of our Research One institution. The next comment is from Dina Behnke, B-E-H-N-K-E. Given the unprecedented time in which we are living, Brian Sandoval is clearly the safest and an excellent choice for UNR president. His deep knowledge and connections within the state will clearly be a critical asset in guiding us through this time with the least possible damage to the university. He is extremely well-respected and liked by a wide constituency, and I'm not particularly concerned about his lack of academic experience and credentials. I have no doubt that he will select strong people to complement his deficiencies in academia. And I'm a strong believer that outsiders often bring dynamic change and growth to organizations. However, after hearing all four candidates in both the trustee as well as community forums, I think the bold choice for the long term would be Jonathan Capel. His vision for integrating learning with research and connecting UNR to the community was compelling, exciting, and energizing. I think he has the intelligence, experience, and passion to take us to a new level. So, we are at a critical crossroads. Do we take a risk on a relative unknown, or do we choose the candidate with the experience, connections, and wisdom to guide us through this next turbulent period? Given the high stakes, this may be the time to choose conservatively. The next comment is from Bernard Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. As someone raised in White Pine County, graduated and played football at UNLV, and a longtime Reno resident, I ask you to support and appoint former Governor Brian Sandoval as the new president of UNR. The next comment is from Terry Rodefer, R-O-D-E-F-E-R. I am in complete disbelief that the Board of Regents would even consider a politician who has absolutely no experience whatsoever to lead this university, especially at this critical time. I hope you can put aside whatever political favors you may believe you're paying off and do what is right for the university at this time. You can clearly see there is only one candidate who is far above anyone else. She is the right candidate. She is the right selection. She would be a historic selection for the university, yet she has the background and intelligence to lead this university where it needs to go at this critical time. Please do not disappoint those of us who have been educated at the university, supported and cheered for the university. Do the right thing. Dr. Evans-Cowley is the right person. There is no other choice. I am a 1991 graduate of the University of Nevada, Reno, having earned a BA. During my tenure at UNR, I achieved several awards, including Dean's List, Who's Who, and Top 10 Senior Graduating Women. My family has been longtime supporters of the university, having funded naming contributions at the Mathewson IGT Knowledge Center, Art Niche, and Fourth Floor Study Room, the Fitness Staircase at the E.L. Wiegand Fitness Center, the Champions Plaza at Mackey Stadium, as well as establishing an endowment for the college business at the Knowledge Center, contributions to the Silver and Blue Society, and various donations to the athletic department, among other financial commitments. Also, a family member has been a foundation trustee for many years in various leadership roles. It is truly shocking and disappointing that Kevin Carman, Provost, was not selected as a finalist to be the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno. Nevertheless, I have taken the time to review CV applications of the four finalists. One applicant was demoted from his position as a provost without any meaningful explanation. One applicant has no background in academia and is clearly not qualified. As such, these individuals should not be given any consideration. With regard to the remaining applicants, Dr. Jennifer Evans-Cowley clearly stands out. Her positions with Ohio State and North Texas have given her an extraordinary and diverse experience. She has led North Texas, which is a similarly ranked R1 research institution as UNR. She knows how to build critical relationships with communities to ensure meaningful economic development through partnership. She fully understands the importance of and how to attract and retain top faculty to further grow and diversify the student body that is critical to drawing merit scholars and highly qualified students that in turn elevates an institution's ranking. She knows how to market a university to potential donors by explaining how the ongoing research and innovative activities can benefit the community, state, and region. She has successfully led fundraising endeavors at both Ohio State and North Texas that would be critical to helping UNR complete its current $500 million capital campaign. She has demonstrated her ability to strategically grow the academic programs at North Texas, where 89 programs are now ranked in the top 100 nationally. She has the relationships and expertise to identify and work with various ranking organizations to elevate a university's profile on a national level. Dr. Evans-Cowley is enthusiastic about UNR's future. She is energetic, she is intelligent and thoughtful. She's greatly respected in the field of academia. She's creative and strategic in developing and implementing ideas that best serve a particular institution's needs. She is fully engaged in diversity and has led initiatives to ensure that the four-year graduation rates for Hispanic students were equal to non-Hispanic students at North Texas. She is committed to ensuring that issues of social equality and justice are incorporated into campus life through the implementation of forums and collaborative policies. She understands the importance of the college experience to students, whether they are on campus or how to develop a meaningful experience for those tied to remote learning during this COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Evans-Kelly is a rising star in academia. She's the most qualified candidate to be the next president of UNR. Her appointment would be historic as the first female to lead the university. She's the best choice. She is the right choice. The Board of Regents needs to show the courage to do something truly extraordinary and historic by appointing Dr. Jennifer Evans-Kelly as the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno. The next comment is from Joshua Lewers, L-U-E-R-S. After the meeting yesterday, I could not have felt more disappointed in our Board of Regents and institutional advisory members. Several disconcerting things took place. Firstly, I found that when deciding on a finalist candidate, it seemed as if no thought was taken into account of the feedback from the undergraduate forum that happened the days prior. Although its feedback was stated, I could not help but feel that the regents and advisory members had an extreme lack of care for student and faculty opinion, almost as if the forum itself was a courtship rather than an event designed to gather and interpret real concern. Second, when deciding the finalist candidate, members were advised to choose their preferred top two finalists. Before this, several members of the Institutional Advisory Board stated a relationship that they have had or currently have with Governor Sandoval, including a regent on the ad hoc committee. Nevertheless, all of these members with a conflict of interest still voted, unsurprisingly, with Sandoval as their top candidate. The amount of trust that I have lost for the Institutional Advisory Board is almost immeasurable. Their actions make me question whether they serve for this university and its students and faculty or their own personal interests. As for our own student representatives to the committee, I am proud to see President Hall, Speaker Murphy, and GSA President Will Carrasco make the decisions they feel will best benefit the campus and its students, for I know they have the best interests at heart. I cannot say the same for any other member of the board. The decision made on the 16th was not a decision based around students. It was not a decision centered around improving diversity and inclusion. It was not a decision to uplift our campus in the most efficient way possible. The decision made last Wednesday was about money. And in these circumstances, I believe that Governor Sandoval will be a president who can take us out of our economic slump. In the future, I hope that both the advisory board and the regents can be upfront and honest about their pivotal and critical choices for the university. The next comment is from Ryan Almazan, A-L-M-A-Z-A-N. It is with great concern that I and many other students regard the most likely appointment of former Governor Brian Sandoval as the president of the University of Nevada, Reno. Of course, this is submitted before any confirmation is made regarding President Johnson's successor, but it is already clear that Sandoval is likely to win that spot. However, we have concerns over how he received it and if his likely appointment was fair. He has run a state, but not a university, and yet we think the board might favor Sandoval despite more experienced and more ambitious candidates at the table. We believe he may be handed the position out of respect for his former seniority or simply for his pre-existing connections in the state and ENSHE. Over this, I implore the Board of Regents to heavily consider their options. Students, at least, seek a university president that will empower faculty, staff, and students to turn UNR into a school that students actually want to go to and a school that supports their future, rather than one that Nevadans choose simply because it's cheaper or not UNLV. We need a president dedicated to nurturing quality of our education and college experience, and it's difficult to find that in a man that, unlike the other three finalists, has not even held a leading administrative university position, let alone a track record of university achievements, proving they can properly lead and manage one. Ensure the choice made today is one that will ensure the emboldening of the university and not one that leaves the university at a plateau. The next comment is from Nate Hodges, H-O-D-G-E-S. Out of the four applicants, three had extensive experience teaching and working within higher education. I am deeply concerned that Mr. Sandoval, the only applicant without teaching higher ed experience, was selected. Additionally, Sandoval has actively voted for the complete removal of UNR programs, theater and dance, and math in the past. I am concerned that establishing someone as president who lacks experiential knowledge as well as the professional empathy and investment that comes from working collaboratively in higher ed will have a detrimental impact on the institution. How is someone who has supported the cutting of programs going to facilitate the growth and success of a burgeoning R1 school during a financial and human, mental and physical health crisis? The next comment is from Julia Bledsoe, B-L-E-D-S-O-E. For the record, Julia Bledsoe, current president of NSHE Classified Council. Today I wish to address an error in my statements made during the board meeting on September 10th, specifically regarding Employee of the Year at Nevada State College. On September 10th, I stated that Nevada State College does not currently host an Employee of the Year award ceremony. This was an error on my part for which I take personal responsibility and I happily stand corrected. They do not currently award Employee of the Month, but they do host the Employee of the Year Award, and I am happy to share that this year's Employee of the Year at NSC will be their 11th year. NSC's award ceremony was affected by the COVID pandemic, but the college is currently in the process of identifying the honoree. It was also shared with me that early in his tenure, President Patterson hosted the classified employees to a luncheon at a local restaurant during Administrative Appreciation Week, where the award was presented. Over the years, the college has grown, the number of classified staff has increased, and the celebration has kept step with NSC's development and has become an annual favorite for the classified staff at NSC. I have personally apologized to President Patterson for the error and express my sincere gratitude to him for his ongoing support and appreciation of the classified staff at NSC. Thank you for the opportunity to set the record straight. The last comment is from Kent Ervin, E-R-V-I-N, State Vice President and Legislative Liaison of the Nevada Faculty Alliance. I wish to comment on Agenda Item 7 regarding the possible charges for the Budget Reduction Response Committee. We reiterate the points made by many of our members at the August 21st meeting when this committee was established. There needs to be full involvement of faculty following established shared governance, especially in the processes in code for any elimination or consolidation of programs. A top-down process to choose academic programs to kill is not appropriate. Employee compensation should not be included as a means of reducing budgets. At most, the committee should consider making furloughs when furloughs are required by the state legislature, progressive in nature, by reducing the salaries of highly paid executive administrators by a higher percentage than the percentage for the rank and file. Finally, the committee must also consider revenue and new or adapted revenue sources as a means of funding NSHE's educational mission. Only looking at cuts and consolidations is not inadequate to ensure the healthy future of our institutions. Thank you. That completes the public comment received so far, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Carrie, for reading those. We will now go to item 2, Chancellor's Report. Chancellor Rhodes, please.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. For the record, my name is Melody Rose, Chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education. Understanding we have a very full agenda ahead of us, and that I reported to you just 1 week ago. I will make my remarks brief this morning. I'm pleased to share that I have had the week to visit most of our northern campuses and have enjoyed myself very much in learning more about the good work and student success going on at TMCC, UNR, WNC, and this afternoon I will be also visiting the Desert Research Institute. It's been a real privilege and an honor to meet with students, staff, and faculty and review our gorgeous campuses. In addition, this week I will be also convening tomorrow for a full-day retreat with the Cabinet as we begin to set our strategic initiatives and vision for moving forward with all of you Regents, and I look forward to sharing the results of that conversation with you, Mr. Chairman. So I will offer those remarks at this time and yield the balance of my time back to you, sir.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. And again, welcome. We will go to item 3, Board Chair's Report. My only item is for informing the board and everybody that item 6 is being pulled from today's agenda. That will probably come back at a future meeting. So no item 6 today. That's all I have for Chair's Report. We will go to item 4. Item 4 is appointment, UNR President for possible action. And I would like to begin making a disclosure. My disclosure is that I have supported and made political campaign contributions to Brian Sandoval. First, to his reelection campaign for governor in 2013. Also, I made a campaign contribution to Brian Sandoval for his campaign for Attorney General approximately 2004, and that was for Attorney General, State of Nevada, of course. With these disclosures, I feel I can deliberate and vote on this matter to be discussed, and I intend to do so. As far as other disclosures, I think I would like to go to Regent McAdoo.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. So each year, the Board of Regents nominates a regent to serve as the Board of Regents representative on the State Board of Education as a non-voting member. In accordance with NRS 281A.420, I want to disclose before voting that Governor Sandoval approved my appointment to the State Board of Education as the regent representative when he was governor. I did not receive any remuneration, that word tricks me, for holding this position, and this appointment does not and will not interfere with my ability to vote objectively on the next president of UNR, Brian Sandoval, in an objective and fair manner. For this reason, I do intend to vote today.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. Regent Carvalho.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am making this disclosure pursuant to NRS 281A.420. I was appointed by Governor Sandoval in 2008 to the Nevada Department of Education's Council to Establish Academic Standards. I was recommended for this appointment by the Department of Education. I do not have any personal ties or relationship with Governor Sandoval, and I do not believe that I have a conflict of interest and can vote objectively on this matter.
Come in here. Go talk to Daddy.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Regent Trachuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have known Governor Sandoval for almost 30 years in my professional capacity, and I make this disclosure pursuant to NRS 281A.420. Shortly after Governor Sandoval stepped down as the federal district court judge, he became a law partner at the firm where I also was a partner, the firm of Jones Vargas. My wife and I contributed to both of his campaigns for governor. These contributions were disclosed by his campaign to the best of my knowledge. I was appointed to his transition team when he was elected governor in 2010. In August of 2011, he appointed me to fill a vacancy on the Board of Regents. I do not stand to gain pecuniarily in any way from his candidacy for this position. I have no commitment in a private capacity with regard to Governor Sandoval that would affect my independence of judgment in making a decision on his candidacy for this position, and I intend to participate and vote on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Trachok. Seeing no other disclosures or comments, to begin the discussion, I would like to go first to Chancellor Rose, if she could give us a brief history of how we arrived here today. And then after Chancellor Rose, we'll go to Chair Trachok, Chair of the Search Committee. So let's begin with Chancellor Rose, please.
Thank you, Chairman DeBrava. Again, for the record, my name is Melody Rose, and I am the Chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today to you during this important agenda item. My role in the conversation is to remind folks of the path that led us to this moment, both in terms of chronology and in terms of procedure. Of course, some of this procedure I was not party to, and I am reporting based on the work of my colleagues in helping me to craft this report. So I should remind everyone that, of course, President Johnson announced his retirement in early November of 2019, which set in motion the conversations to identify his replacement. The initial campus forums were held at UNR on November 13, 2019, in order to collect community input and advice. The board then approved, based on those conversations, a national search on December 6, 2019, and an RFQ was released to the search firms in higher education just a few days later in order to invite applications to help us with that national search. Then on January 31st, 2020, the University of Nevada Reno Presidential Search Committee, Chancellor Riley, my predecessor, and the 32-member Institutional Advisory Committee members met on the UNR campus to further begin the collection of community involvement and comment. At that meeting, they reviewed search procedures with the group, approved leadership statement and related materials, and approved advertising options, all within the confines, of course, and pursuant to code and open meeting law requirements. At that point, Whit Kiefer was selected as the search firm to assist us in this effort, and they were charged with conducting a very active and thorough search to present a diverse pool of candidates and delivered 107 completed applications. They then went on to categorize these completed applications based on strength of the applications and alignment with the presidential profile, ultimately recommending 21 candidates in the A ranking for further consideration. This is the point at which I entered this process and began to work collaboratively with Regent Trachok, chair of the committee, as well as my predecessor, Chancellor Riley. The three of us met with the search firm and our colleagues who are here with us today in mid-August to select semifinalists from this very rich pool. Ultimately, Chancellor Riley and I collaborated to interview 11 semifinalists on August 24th and 25th and had robust conversations at that time, getting to know our candidates a little bit better. We finally named four finalists for consideration at this forum. Those candidates submitted for consideration to the committee and the advisory were Chaudhin Jalali, PhD, Jennifer Evers Cowley, PhD, Jonathan Capel, PhD, and Brian Sandoval, JD. And that completes my report, Chairman DeBrava. You may also at some point want to hear further about the pool from our colleagues at Whit Kiefer.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. Chair Trachok, would you like to pick up the story and let us know how your committee meeting went yesterday?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The yesterday We met starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. We took 15 minutes for a lunch, and I believe we concluded about 8 o'clock, 8:30 last night. The four candidates that were brought forward by the Chancellor and Whit Kiefer were excellent candidates. Each of the candidates had a 90-minute period in which to make a presentation to the ad hoc committee and as well as to the advisory committee. The members of the advisory committee drafted and proposed questions to ask to the candidates. The Chancellor and I selected 12 of those questions, which were posed by members of the advisory committee and of the Regents ad hoc committee. Each of the candidates had the opportunity to respond to the exact same questions. And I must say that the quality of the candidates and their presentations, I won't say exceptional, I think it was remarkable, the interest we had at this university for this position, and the university can be very proud of that fact. After the presentations were made, and after a brief recess, we brought it back to the members of the advisory committee. And each and every one of the members of the advisory committee was given the opportunity to weigh in, and they listed their number one choice and their number two choice. And of the 27 advisory committee members, 22 of those members listed Brian Sandoval as their first choice. Those five who did not list Governor Sandoval as their first choice, they chose either Dr. Cowley or Dr. Capel. But in each and every one of those cases, Governor Sandoval was their second choice. At the conclusion of that, we brought it back to the ad hoc committee, where we heard from each and every one of the regents on the committee. There were no regents that were in attendance per video during the day that had any comments to make on the candidates. At the conclusion of the comments from the regents, we took a motion from Regent Geddes and a second from Regent Page to name or to nominate Governor Sandoval as the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno. At the conclusion of that discussion, the committee forwarded it to the board for consideration today by a 4-1 vote, the nomination of Governor Sandoval for this position. There's one other point that I would like to make, which I thought was also very telling. As a result of the campus visits and the interviews, there were solicitations made there were questionnaires and solicitations made from all that were in attendance. And the Governor Sandoval received 100 more solicitations from those in attendance than any other of the three candidates. And all four of the candidates were positively received by the various communities on the campuses, Governor Sandoval's recommendations and the comments stood out above the other three candidates. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to appoint Governor Sandoval as the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno.
Thank you, Chair Treshock, for your report, and you have made a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
It was that Regent Geddes made that second?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Regent Geddes.
Thank you, gentlemen. First, I'd like to say and express thank you to the advisory committee that assisted you, Chair Treshock, and your committee for them to invest the time and effort, and we know everyone on that committee. They have a love relationship with the university in many different aspects. And also, I was able to watch the committee meeting yesterday, and I was very impressed with the quality of the candidates that the search firm was able to bring for us to consider. So thank you to the search firm and to Chancellor Rose for her assistance. We understand she came into the process midstream, but thank you for her guidance and help. With the motion in the second, I'd now like to open it up for discussion for Regents or anyone that has willing to make some comments. I would like to first go to UNR-ASUN President Dominique Hall. Ms. Hall.
Hello, Regents. I just wanted to address that Joshua Lors, an ASUN senator, just gave public comment about his discernment of those with personal relationships with Governor Sandoval still voting. I am in full support of Governor Sandoval as president of ASUN, of president of UNR. I believe he'll do a fantastic job, and I am excited to work with him if appointed, but I believe this voting process by the Regents is wrong. In ASUN, if we have any personal relationships, we obtain from voting. That's what a disclosure is for. Four of you gave a disclosure of donating or having personal relationships with Governor Sandoval. I believe it would be a conflict of interest and inappropriate for you to vote today.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Will Carrasco, UNR GSA President. Will, are you there, please?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, everyone. Will Carrasco, GSA President, for the record. I would just like to start by saying this has been an amazing experience to see the whole thing. I will say that it is a little bit disheartening seeing the process go through and how Brian Sandoval seems to be elected before the process even began. As President Hall mentioned out, the affiliation of the Board of Regents is very troublesome for me and my constituents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to go to Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to echo your comments as in regards to the search firm and the chancellor and the work that they did in the process. As we all know, when we had to suspend some of these searches due to the pandemic, we got concerned about the pool that would be out there and the applicants that we could get. And I could say after sitting through all four of those interviews yesterday, the applicant pool was as good as I've ever seen in the 27 searches I sat through. I fully support this motion for Governor Sandoval to take the case, and I will tell you, they were four excellent candidates. To me, two of them really stood out on the top, and in looking at Nevada and where we are and where the university is and the trajectory it's on, it was clear to me that Governor Sandoval was the best person to be next president of the university. And one point that he had made during his presentation was putting the best team and cabinet around him. And Dr. Lee, a faculty representative from up here, quoted the Lincoln's team of rivals and putting the best people around him. And we saw the governor do that when he was governor. It wasn't partisan. It was the best people around him to get the job done. And he committed to do that yesterday, and I firmly believe he'll do that and take this institution to the next level and keep it on the positive trajectory that it's been on. And I have full confidence in seconding this motion and encourage all of my colleagues to support this motion and help advance this university forward and help complete the great team of presidents and chancellor that we've assembled through the years. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. I would like to make a clarification And if the maker of the motion agrees, this motion is to approve the appointment of Brian Sandoval as president of UNR. We will come back at the next discussion and possible motion for the contract. So this is only for the approval of Brian Sandoval as president of UNR. Is that correct, Regent Trachuk?
Correct. My motion was for the appointment of Governor Sandoval as the next president.
And that was my understanding as the
Thank you. And thank you, Regent Geddes. I would like to now go to Chancellor Rose and then to Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Chairman. Again, for the record, Melody Rose, Chancellor. I just wanted to add to the commentary here how grateful I am for our partners at Whitkiefer. Across my career, I have worked with many search consultants, and I've been very grateful for the partnership and the exceptional candidate pool that they surfaced. I like to say that in higher ed, the word search needs to be a noun and a verb, and we see that they employed that advice in their work, surfacing a tremendous group of exceptional folks. That is both a credit to them and the work of Zach Smith and Suzanne Teer and their team, as well as to the institution and its quality. So just wanted to make sure we were thanking our great colleagues here.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the public comment and comments from others I thought needed some clarification, preferably from counsel, about the obligations of an elected official to vote for an issue and when they may abstain and when they must vote. And I thought maybe General Counsel Reynolds could shed some light on that, because as I understand, unless you fall within a clearly defined area that you must abstain from, or one that would cast a light that can make you appear to be extremely not impartial, you must vote. There's an obligation as a state made up of citizen legislators and citizen regents and citizen city council members, etc. The state ethics laws highly encourage people to vote, but for a very strong reason not to. And I thought it might be enlightening for Chief Counsel Reynolds to explain that law a little better, so that people watching can understand why people made disclosures and did not abstain.
Thank you, Regent Hayes, for that. General Counsel Reynolds, if you're there, if you wanted to weigh in on that, please.
Yes, this is Joe Reynolds, General Counsel. It is my understanding that the members of the Board of Regents who did make disclosures had previously consulted with the Board's Chief of Staff on that with respect to the analysis. But what I can share for the Board anybody watching, one of the operative provisions in our NRS is Chapter 281A, which is our ethics statutes, and within that is NRS 281A.420. The decision whether to abstain from a vote is a personal decision. In what I mean by that, it's an individual decision that any elected member or appointed member to a public body needs to make for themselves, within obviously the bounds of the laws and policies. One of the things that our ethics laws do look very closely at is whether there's a pecuniary interest, a financial interest, that any member has to gain from a particular action. What we've heard is the regents that have disclosed that they absolutely do not have a pecuniary interest in any decision before them today. The other guiding principle is also transparency and disclosure. The basis for disclosure is so that the public, anybody looking at the decision and analyzing it, will be aware of the background to that, so that they can make their own, you know, analysis and their own judgment about that, but that there's nothing secretive going on. And I hope that
may
answers the question.
May I follow up to that very quickly?
Yeah, Regent Hayes, please.
Did the Supreme Court, General Counsel Reynolds, didn't the Supreme Court a few years ago offer guidance that it is also an ethical violation to abstain but for situations where abstention is necessary. So not voting and choosing not to vote where there is not a pecuniary or other strong reason to abstain would be a violation of our ethical duties. Is my understanding correct?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, I vaguely recall that there is an issue along those lines, Regent Hayes, but I have not read it recently, and I can't recall it off the top of my head. But what you're saying, I know that there is some law and some guidance out there along those lines.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Regent Treshark, did you have a clarification?
Yes, Regent Hayes is absolutely correct. And this issue has come up to the board in the past. And when regents did not have a pecuniary interest in a matter, and they did not have a ground for recusal based on 281A, it was the advice of counsel in those instances that the regent was not allowed to abstain from voting on the matter.
Thank you for that clarification. I'm going to go to UNLV CSUN President Joshua Padilla and then Regent Levine. President Padilla.
Hi, thank you, Chair. So respectfully to this board and to Mr. Sandoval, I'm perplexed at how Brian Sandoval has become the finalist to be nominated as UNR president by the entire board. If I'm looking at the same CV as everybody else, one quick control F finds Mr. Sandoval has no experience in the educational sector at all, let alone no experience at a university. So if you need someone to look at a CVs and then build a qualified team below them that's, you know, going to do the actual leading of a university, I'd like to throw my hat in the bin because I think I can do that. The last time I checked, Mr. Sandoval would be leading one of two top-tier universities in the state with zero experience. I'd like to also say it is disheartening, like my peers have said before me, that it seems like Mr. Sandoval has basically been given the position before the whole process began. I mean, there's already a press conference set for today, the title being, you know, former Governor Brian Sandoval selected as UNR's next president, press conference set for 2:30 p.m. And this is before kind of any discussion from the regents as a whole or anything like that. I know an update on how the ad hoc meeting went was given, but I'd like to know the rationale from the regents that are voting in favor of Mr. Sandoval's nomination. What exactly is he bringing to the table that the other candidates aren't? And I don't necessarily mean like a re-emphasis of his CV compared to his, but what qualifications, what is he bringing specifically to this table that, you know, you're in favor of voting for him? Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing as no answer, we'll come back to you later, President Padilla. Regent Levine.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. First, I want to say thank you to the students and all those who put in public comment. Just in the past week, I've been so reminded of the courage that the students of the Nevada System of Higher Education have. And certainly it's something that I hope more within NCHE and on the Board of Regents can develop and show. To answer Joshua's question, because I think it's a valid question, and I think that we should be held accountable to those who we serve, and students are certainly of that population. I am going to support Brian Sandoval, Joshua, because he is who came out of the UNR search committee. I have been consistent with that with the other search committees. I do respect those who are put on the search committee, but I think the bigger question that I'm hearing from you, Dominique Hall, Will Carrasco and others who submitted public comment goes back to the structure of how all of these things work. And as we just listened to some of my colleagues, we could get caught up all day in the legal jargon of how this all can develop. I'm not an attorney, but I can also tell you that is just a way to toss out fancy words as a distraction, which I know all of us have become accustomed to. In terms of the distrust of this board, I also think that's what's playing a hand in this. I think aside from the conversation about Governor Sandoval, who, you know, I do think it shows that UNR should be very proud that you have a former governor who is interested in taking up the leader of the realm for UNR. And I also want to say I was most impressed with the other candidates, especially considering that they knew they were up against Governor Sandoval, and whether or not it was already the decision was already a bit finalized before, I don't know. But I can tell you, in terms of the conversation about conflicts of interest, I think you all bring up great points. And I think moving forward, it's something that NSHE needs to strengthen. You know, we heard earlier from one of my colleagues about how you need to be able to show you're extremely impartial or not impartial. Well, you know, apparently from most of the people who have disclosures, you just have to make up that decision on your own. I have no disclosure. In reference to Governor Sandoval, I'm going to support his candidacy again because the search committee recommended him. And I don't think he's going to do a bad job. I think he's a good person and he's going to want to do a good job. But again, I just think the bigger picture on this, which we have heard every single meeting, is that NSHE and the Board of Regents need to strengthen their organizational chart in the sense that they need to be more transparent, they need to be held accountable, and quite frankly, they need to have more public acknowledgement of these things so that they can actually be doing the oversight that they're here to do. So I just want to say thank you again to the students and the faculty who made their voices heard. And I also want to say thank you to the other candidates because I really was most impressed. They were really strong candidates, and UNR should be very proud that you had such a great mix of candidates going after the presidential position. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Levine. We're going to go to Regent Geddes, then to President Hall, and then Regent Perkins. Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not going to repeat anything that I said earlier. But I would like to respond that, you know, this is the 27th search I've been involved with, and every single search I've been involved with, I've gone in without a preferred candidate going into the search. So it is never a predetermined process in my mind. And as a matter of fact, about a decade ago when we were looking at President Johnson, he was third on my list when we went into the room, and going through the full interview process, he came to the top. And I would say he was one of the better presidents that we've had in my lifetime at the university. And one of the strengths that President Johnson had was he was at UNR for 4 years before he became president. And he knew the institution, and he knew what was happening on campus, and he dealt with the budget crisis of the Great Recession and when we were doing curricular review on campus. Similarly, President Crowley, who was up here forever, came up through the ranks of the political science department, and he knew the institution. And when we did the interviews yesterday, two things that stood out with Governor Sandoval, one is he knows the institution. He's a graduate of the institution. He's been affiliated with it ever since the early 80s. And he knows what's going on up here, and he did his homework. He met with many people on campus to learn all the ins and outs and the intricacies of higher education that he didn't know prior to that. Additionally, he was part of leading us through the Great Recession and dealing with the budget. And as we're looking at this institution and we're looking at strong leadership, we are looking at someone who can help guide us through the budget issues of the pandemic, put together a solid team to take this institution to the next level. All four of those candidates were excellent. I thought all four of them could do the job. But Governor Sandoval stood out to me, and that's why I supported him yesterday. That's why I support him today. And that's why I encourage everybody to support him today. And I'm sorry that the students feel that it was a cook deal. I guarantee you it was not a cook deal. And I'm happy to come speak to any of you one-on-one or any of your groups or any of your organizations and explain what I just explained today. But for this institution at this time, this was the right decision for us to make, and I encourage you all to make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. We'll go to Dominique Hall, please.
Hello again. In regard to CSUN President Padilla, as ASUN president, we believe that Governor Sandoval's extensive knowledge of Nevada and his leadership will guide us through this tough time, and he will do a great job. After 10 hours of the committee yesterday, we all believed he'd be the best candidate. The issue here is the conflict of interest from the four disclosures that we just heard. We also just heard general counsel give us advice that this is an individual matter. And I believe that when you donate to someone for two campaigns, you've known them for 30 years, I just have a personal issue I would have a personal issue using my leadership position to vote for someone knowing I donated to them twice and I've worked with them for countless numbers of years. So I think that's our issue here, is with the four disclosures. And once again, because this is an individual matter, we just have an issue with the individuals voting, and they should be abstaining.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
It takes a second to come off mute. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a lone dissenter, I think I can answer that question for Mr. Padilla. During the deliberations, I watched basically almost all 3 days of it. And yes, there were candidates. The reason that I was a lone dissenter is because I saw Governor Sandoval, although a great governor, he didn't just walk into that governorship. He was tempered, mentored, and guided through many different stages and reiterations to become the renowned statesman that he did become. I believe those are the same steps that should be considered for president of UNR Reno, or University of Nevada Reno. Those same steps, like being an associate dean or being a tenure track professor or being even a chair on the way up to the university regent. He was actually my second choice, but I do believe I'll take one for the team. And if that's what the committee wanted and wants for University of Nevada Reno, I'm willing to give it a thumbs up and full steam ahead, because I believe that's my part as a regent, is to make the best decision I know how on behalf of my constituents and the students. So that's the end of my comment.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Regent Hayes, did you want to add?
Yes, I do. I would like to answer President Padilla's question and then just further clarify one point. Yes, it is an individual decision whether to violate the law or not. That is not in dispute. The question is, Nevada ethics laws require you to have a reason that is specified in statute for abstaining on a vote. The people that are voting, that have having a personal friendship for 30 years, is not in statute. Abstaining for that reason, almost any lawyer I can imagine that's worked in this field will tell you that would be violating the ethics law if you abstain because you've known someone. That is not a reason to abstain in this state, a state made up of citizens who legislate and lead in all facets. Like I said before, whether it's the legislature, city councils, many of us are part-time people, and the state recognizes that in its laws and looks for a financial or family or other strong interest that could lead someone to make a decision that would not be in the best interest of their position. Friendship is not one of those listed reasons in the statute. President Padilla, I will happily answer your question. I was not on the search committee. We have a board of 13 members. I was fortunate enough and honored to be able to step in for Regent Lieberman to finish off the UNLV search committee. And I thought the work that we did at the UNLV search committee was great. We had outstanding candidates, and I had every expectation that the rest of the board, who was not able to spend the 10 or 12 hours we spent that day meeting with the candidates, hearing them, seeing them, would respect our decision. Absent some startling new revelation, they would respect the decision of the committee, just as I do for other searches that I am not a part of. If there was some information that had come to light between last night's vote and today's of some great impropriety that we were not aware of, I would certainly vote against the recommendation of the committee. However, I did not sit in that room all day yesterday. I popped in and out of some of the meetings. I got to hear parts of different candidates. I did hear the deliberation, and what I heard at the end was very strong support from the advisory committee, and it seemed that the community that makes up the supporters of UNR was very strongly in support of this candidate. So I'm going to be supporting the committee vote. Doesn't mean whether I would have had a different opinion if I'd sat there for 10 hours or, you know, based on paper, but I support the work of the committee that was doing work that I was not able to do because I was not on that committee. So that's why I'll be supporting this. But thank you for the question.
Thank you, Regent Hayes. Regent Carter.
All due respect to Regent Hayes, He's not our counsel. He's not our attorney. He's not necessarily an expert on ethics that we're asking for his opinion. We have our counsel and we have our attorneys here at the system that we rely on for our opinions, as well as there's no recourse against him versus the recourse and the liability that would be from legal advice from our attorneys and our counsel. I think that's an important thing that we don't allow regents to testify on legal matters when they're not hired to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carter. Seeing no further discussion, I'm prepared to call for the roll call vote for the motion. Carrie, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Yes. Regent McLeod.
Yes.
Regent Moran. Regent
Yes.
Page. Oh, thank you, Regent Moran. Regent Page. Regent Perkins.
Hold on. Hello?
Yes, Regent Perkins.
I'm sorry, it took a minute to unmute. I'm voting to sustain the recommendation. So, yes.
Thank you. Regent Trachuk.
Aye.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Levine.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to go back to Regent Page?
You can try Regent Page again.
Regent Page. The motion passes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. What I'd like to do is go over the contract, and then we would then turn it over to Chancellor Rose, and then I would anticipate that Governor Sandoval is there in the student union or nearby. Chancellor Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you like me to present the terms of the contract?
Please, if you do the summary and the terms.
Certainly. Again, for the record, Melody Rose, I present to the Board of Regents for your consideration the summary of terms for Brian Sandoval, President Contract, University of Nevada, Reno. The key material components of the proposed contract are as stated: base salary of $500,000 per fiscal year, a COLA eligible only if approved by the Nevada State Legislature, car allowance $8,000 per fiscal year, housing allowance $18,000 per fiscal year, host account $5,000 per fiscal year. The contract period would extend from October 5th, 2020 through October 4th, 2024. And there will be no moving expenses associated with this contract. And that concludes the material summary of terms of the proposed contract for your consideration.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. Regent Trachuk.
Yes, I have one question.
Regent DeBrava?
Is that Regent Page?
Yeah, I just want to say, for some reason, I was having a problem with my video. I was saying yes, and I sent a text. So I was able to get in, so I just want to let you know that. Thank you.
Here, we'll record that. Thank you.
Thank you. Pitchup.
Yes, I have one question of the Chancellor, and then after that, I would like to make a motion. Chancellor Rose, is this the same contract under substantially the same terms as with the new UNLV president?
Yes, it is.
I move that we approve the contract.
I'll second.
Thank you, Regent Trachuk. Do I have a second?
Second.
Who was that?
Regent Page.
Discussion regarding the contract for Brian Sandoval for president of UNR. Gary, I'll have you take a roll call vote to approve the motion to approve the contract.
Regent Moriarty.
My vote is yes, overqualified for the position.
Regent Page.
Aye.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Trachok.
Aye.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Levine.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Carrie. Congratulations to Brian Sandoval, the next president of UNR. Regent Trachok, is Brian Sandoval present there?
Yes, he is. He's at the podium, and if he's comfortable with taking off his mask, he's far enough away that I think that would be appropriate in these circumstances.
President-elect Sandoval, if you'd be so kind to make some comments, please.
Chairman Dubrava and Vice Chairman Del Carlo, members of the Board of Regents, first and foremost, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank all of you for your support. This has been an extremely rigorous process, and I've listened to what you've had to say and really look forward to working with all of you as the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno. I'd also like to thank the Chancellor, Chancellor Melody Rose. I've just had the benefit of recently meeting the Chancellor, and I think she is an amazing leader and has been a wise choice for this system, and I truly look forward to working with you. I'd like to thank you, Chairman Trachok, of the Ad Hoc Search Committee, the members of the committee, the community members, the regents who sat on there. As I mentioned before, this is a process unlike anything that I've ever been through. And the time and effort that went into making this decision makes me proud as an alum of the University of Nevada, Reno. I'd also like to compliment Whit Kiefer and Dr. Zach Smith, who's the principal of that firm, and all the members that were associated with that firm. Again, a very professional process, and one that I was extremely impressed with, and particularly your staff, Dr. Smith, their attentiveness and attention to detail was amazing. I'd also like to thank all the groups that were involved in the respective interviews on Monday. And again, this was 9 hours of different groups that the depth of their questions were something that, again, I think this was a compliment to the process and the fact that everybody was involved, the students, the faculty, staff, graduate students, the deans. I could go on and on. Again, a very, very thorough process. I'd also like to compliment the other finalists for this position. Dr. Jennifer Evans Cali from the University of North Texas. And before I mention the other names, I haven't had the opportunity to be introduced to any of them. But I will say the number of comments that I received, the positive comments on the quality of their presentations, again, for me is something that is a compliment to this process as well as to the university. Dr. Jonathan Capel. Again, somebody from Arizona State University, a dean who I had the opportunity to watch online and watch his interviews, somebody that I was incredibly impressed with. And finally, Dr. Chaden Jalali from Ohio University was somebody that I thought was a very high quality candidate. Before I get into some personal remarks, and I want to be respectful of your time, I think this is an opportunity to thank President Mark Johnson for his service to this university, not only as a provost, but as the president. I've had the privilege and honor of working with President Johnson for many years, somebody that has been principled and steady and strong with regard to how he's led this university, and somebody that who made me proud to be an alum. I also want to compliment him on the fact that he delayed his return back to the faculty and his dedication to the university because of the pandemic that we're involved in. He's done an amazing job, and I personally and publicly want to thank him for that. Mr. Chairman, Madam Vice Chairman, members of the Board of Regents, I am humbled and honored with your support. I look forward to leading this university for the next at least 4 years. With regard to the comments that I've heard today, President Hall and President Padilla, I thank you for your participation here. I assure you I'm going to work extremely hard and, as is mentioned, build a team like no other to take this university to even greater heights. This is an amazing university that has changed lives and has changed this community and changed the state and has made its mark. We're going to go through some difficult times, but I do believe that the future is bright, and it is the honor of a lifetime to be able to be appointed as the next president of the University of Nevada, Reno. I thank you. Before I leave, I'd like to introduce my wife, Laura Lynn Sandoval, who is a 1992 graduate of the University of Nevada, as well as my daughter, Marissa, who is a junior at Reno High School, who are here today to support me. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much for the opportunity to be here, to be able to lead this university. I look forward to working very closely with all of you, the students, faculty, staff, alumni, foundation, and all the other individuals that are interested in this campus. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President-elect Sandoval. And on behalf of the board, we also look forward to working with you and to your leadership. It's a unprecedented time, which we hear so often now, and we have so many challenges ahead of us. And not only will you be help to the University of Nevada, Reno, you'll be a help to the system as a whole, I'm sure. I do want to go to UNR Faculty Senate President Amy Payson.
Thank you, members of the board. On behalf of the faculty at UNR, I want to welcome Governor, now President Sandoval, back to our Wolfpack family. As obviously we heard through the public comment that some have concern that he doesn't have academic leadership background and whether or not that's fitting for the role of UNR president. For many of us, it's uncharted territory having somebody that hasn't gone through the academic ranks now as our new leader. However, we have seen that Governor Sandoval has taken the time to do his homework, to talk with the different constituencies at our university. And as faculty, as educators, we are open to learning and understanding new things. And we hope that Governor Sandoval, President Sandoval, will continue to learn from us as well in the process. I look forward to working with President Sandoval as Faculty Senate Chair in our long tradition of shared governance. I know we'll face some challenges in the near future, and I look forward to working with you, especially as we get into what will be a challenging legislative session. I have confidence that all of us working together, we will continue to be successful in our public education mission. So again, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you. I have a question for Regent Trachok before I think we're going to take a 10-minute break. I would assume that would be helpful up there on the Reno campus, Regent Trachok, for a 10-minute break now.
I think it was a wonderful idea.
Then let's make it happen. It's going to be a 10-minute break. We'll resume at 2:35. Code amendments to authorize furloughs in response to COVID-19 emergency budget shortfall for possible action. Chief General Counsel Joe Reynolds, please.
Sorry, Chair, we were debating the finer points of the law.
No problem. If Joe, are you there? You
Joe,
are.
Joe Reynolds.
Go ahead for item five.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Joe Reynolds, for the record. This matter, we are requesting approval of code amendments to allow the implementation of furloughs as directed by the Nevada State Legislature or the Governor's Office. This matter and these amendments were originally enacted by the Board on May 29th, is emergency and temporary code provisions. The reason that they were enacted when they were so that they would be effective when faculty's contracts were automatically renewed on July 1st. And because the 120-day emergency provisions will expire on September 26th, this request is so that to allow the Board to make these amendments permanent. A couple points about these provisions are that they are only applicable for fiscal year 2021. And that is something that was discussed with the Faculty Senate when they were originally implemented. And this is authorization code provisions. When there is a specific furlough policy, we intend to bring that back to the Board for a later agenda item, and that those recommendations will be consistent with Assembly Bill 3 that was passed by the Nevada State Legislature this summer.
Thank you, Chief General Counsel Joe Reynolds. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
And I got McMichael as a second. Who was the motion maker?
Trachok.
Thank you, sir. Any discussion regarding these amendments to authorize furloughs per Joe Reynolds' description? Seeing none, I'd like to take a roll call vote. Carrie, please.
Regent Page.
Aye.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Buck.
Aye.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Chair DeBrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Levine.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran. The motion passes.
Thank you, Carrie. We will go to item 7, the mission statement for the Budget Reduction Response Committee and Ad Hoc Advisory Committee. This obviously is carryover from our previous discussion, and I think you'll see in the materials the pretty much same suggested mission statement is for us to look at, and I think it's been labeled now the draft or preliminary mission statement. I would look for comments or a motion. Regent Page.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move a motion to approve the preliminary draft mission statement.
Thank second. You, Regent Page. Do I have a second?
Second, Trachok.
And that was Regent Trachok. Thank you. Any comments or suggestions or guidance? Regent Carter.
Sure. My comment was just going to be on the name of the committee, but I think at this point we could probably just have the committee send that back to the Board with any name changes or things like that. I was just thinking something like Innovation Committee for Innovation, Change, and Efficiency versus the current name, which is the Budget Reduction Response Committee.
Yeah, what I would think to let the committee, once it's officially formed, discuss, either make changes to the mission statement, and if they suggest that they would like a name change, bring that back to the full board. I think that would be the easiest way to do that.
I agree.
Regent Levine.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. You highlighted this a little bit. I have the old in my hand, and I'm looking at the new as well, and I recognize you added draft preliminary to the top. Thank you for doing that, as there was a lot of concern last go-around that we looked at this. Chair DeBrava, I was surprised that the five items listed below hadn't been reworded, elaborated on, or anything like that, and I was hoping that you could just explain the thought process on this, because we certainly received an overwhelming amount of public opinion. Different regions had input. I was hoping you could explain why that is.
Thank you, Regent Levine. So I just thought it was easier to keep it broad. As the advisory committee is appointed and the subcommittee is appointed, at their meeting, they can wordsmith, expand, or eliminate stuff that they agree upon, and then bring that back to the full board. It was just more from an efficiency standpoint, because today, if we were to do that, it could be here for quite some time.
I recognize that, Chair DeBrava. Review employee compensation listed number 5. That was something that was very charging for a lot of people and concerning during the last meeting. So I was surprised that that would still make it on this go-around. Surely there's a better way that we could word that if we had a better sense. I think it's echoing. If IT can mute the Board of Regents meeting at UNR's campus, that might be helpful. Anyway, if we could reword number 5, I think that would be a good start, because reviewing employee compensation, we heard from the Nevada Faculty Alliance during the last meeting, that could mean a whole host of things, and that drew out a lot of emotions last time. One thing that I know I've mentioned and that you referenced in the last meeting about my mention of it was looking at more of a progressive model, so that those who are making less feel less of the pay reduction than those making more. Perhaps you could word it in a way that could be a bit more inclusive in that, and exclusive of going after employee compensation as an overall, because as you can see, that can mean a lot of things.
Ms. Levine, you make a good point. I didn't mean for it to be interpreted as going after employee compensation. I just meant for it to be a topic of discussion. And I would actually, if you had any suggestions to make an amendment, if you wanted to include word or verbiage right now, or we could leave it broad, and the committee could certainly hash that out with the advisory committee.
I think on record, knowing that we're not looking at employee benefits in terms of faculty benefits that they have negotiated on their own terms, that's something that's really important for folks tuning in and for public record to acknowledge that that's not on the table.
Point well made. Thank you. Any other comments? Let me just check here. Laura Nauman, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, Laura Nauman, Faculty Senate Chair, Nevada State College, and Chair for the Council of Chairs for the Nevada System of Higher Education. I'm speaking on behalf of the Council of Chairs. I do want to acknowledge that the board and Chair DeBrava have heard the calls and comments from faculty, staff, and students to have representation on this proposed committee. These comments have resulted in new edits to the mission statement that include adding the following phrase, quote, "The committee will consider the input and recommendations of key student, faculty, staff, and community stakeholders, including those of the ad hoc advisory committee." However, given that the mission statement has no other changes to it and continues to list the consideration of, quote, "possible mergers, consolidations, and or closures," and, quote, "elimination of certain programs at any of the NSHE institutions," end quote, these are decisions that directly impact faculty and students and are the types of decisions that have happened at the institution level following the principles of shared governance and in consultation with those who may be impacted. Given that much of today's meeting has centered around the transparency and perceptions of the board, I will reiterate that there is strong perception that the mission statement as written gives the board considerable leeway and authority to make recommendations in a top-down fashion, only requiring minimum consultation of the ad hoc advisory board. I understand that we're awaiting Chair DeBrava's appointment of the chair of this committee, and many of these decisions will fall under this region's purview, but I will again reiterate the council's preference for a committee membership that includes the relevant stakeholders as seated, i.e. voting members, alongside the regions. This type of committee membership was most recently used for the performance pay task force and models the type of committee membership that the council would like to see for this committee. So for everyone's edification, I'm going to read directly from the agenda item included in the September 2019 quarterly meeting. This is from agenda item 21, ENSHE Task Force on Performance Pay Administration and Support. So regarding membership, the second paragraph reads as follows, quote, the chancellor recommends that the task force membership include four regions, four representatives of the state legislature, three student body members representing each institutional sector, universities, state college, and community colleges, three faculty senate chairs representing each institutional sector, universities, state college, and community colleges, one administrative faculty representative, one community college business officer representative, one four-year institution business officer representative, one representative from the governor's finance office, the ENSHE chief financial officer, and the ENSHE vice chancellor of academic and student affairs. The board chairman will appoint the regents, and legislative leadership will be asked to appoint legislators to the task force. All other members will be selected by the chancellor in consultation with the respective constituency group and the board chairman. The task force will comply with the Nevada open meeting law, end quote. So I don't mean to suggest that the performance pay task force membership provides an exhaustive list of membership, but it does provide a clear example of what transparent representation looks like. Notably, missing from this list is a representative from Classified Employee Council, and for the Budget Reduction Response Committee, I would also add representation from System Computing Services, given the charge to look at efficiencies in computing services. So I would like to echo some of the comments of the regents, Regent Carter and Regent Levine. We agree that the title of the committee as a Budget Reduction Response Committee conveys a unique message about what that committee's charge is. Council of Chairs has repeatedly encouraged using terminology like a budget study. And that, again, as Regent Levine raised, some of the wording of those bullet-pointed items do create a reaction and a bristling from faculty and students. And so as the committee moves forward, I ask that the chair and the regents be very considerate and thoughtful of some of the comments that faculty and public comment have made. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Nauman. I have Regent Carvalho. I'm going to go to Regent Carter, then Regent Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to say thank you to Dr. Nauman for her comments regarding the Performance Pay Task Force. As the chair of that committee, we did have a lot of input from various stakeholders, and I think that the outcome was that much better because everybody had an equal say and participation within that committee. So I would just echo what Dr. Nauman just said. And although I'm not sure if this is I don't mean for it to go against what she said, but I was thinking about the five areas that you've laid out in this draft. And I just wondered if we could include the word may in that sentence above it, where it says that generate additional revenue or reduce expenditures and may include the following areas, so that we can be as broad as possible in order to consider everything that may be on the table. Thank you.
Regent Carvalho, if I would take that as you're suggesting an amendment to the motion, and I think the motion maker and second would probably agree with that. Am I correct with that, Regent Page?
Yes.
And Regent Trachok?
Regent Trachok has left the meeting.
Left the room or the meeting?
He said he had a doctor's appointment and he's gone. I hope it's not an eye appointment.
Well, how about we do this, if I may? In the spirit of Regent Carvalho's suggestion, as chair of the board, I certainly think that is a reasonable first edit that any committee that is created would put in place.
Chair DeBrava, this is Joe Reynolds for the record.
Chair Page
amended his motion to include Regent Page to include Regent Carvalho's amendment. You could ask if there is a second, a new second, in light that Regent Trachok has left the meeting.
I'll second. This is Kathy McAdoo.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo, for that second. Thank you, Regent Carvalho, for that suggestion. That's, I think, would make a lot of people feel more comfortable with May, as you suggested. Any other comments or suggestions? We're going to circle back to Regent Levine, please.
Mr. Reynolds, can you give us some clarity about what Professor Newman's recommendations were about the structure of the Performance Pay Task Force Committee and what today, this agenda item, how we would need to move forward so that we could restructure it accordingly? Because I think that's a great recommendation. And per her comment, it says the committee will consider the input of others, but certainly will consider doesn't mean that they have any voting powers or that they would be equal to Regent's voting powers. So it's an absolutely good recommendation. What do we need to do to make that recommendation happen?
And Regent Levine, if I may, before General Counsel Reynolds answers.
Sorry, Chair DeBrava, I'd ask for some legal counsel on that.
Go ahead, Joe.
Joe Reynolds, for the record, thank you, Regent Levine. One suggestion is because this item is just agendized for the board to approve a preliminary mission statement for the committee, the board could come back with a new agenda item at the next meeting to discuss membership. The board could also today edit the mission statement to include additional direction. As this is a mission statement, it's an opportunity for this board to give direction for this committee on what its charge in its purpose is. And I hope that answers the question.
Mr. Reynolds, that's very helpful. Can you clarify on what that recommendation would be if we were to revise this mission statement so it had a little bit more direction on that?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, thank you, Regent Levine. I'm looking at the second paragraph where it does discuss that the committee will consider the input and recommendations of key student, faculty, staff, and community stakeholders, as well as those of the ad hoc advisory committee. This board could add additional language if it chose to do so to clarify who those individuals could be more specifically. It's broad right now, but as we heard with respect to the performance pay task force, it was more specific in who the individual people would be who served on the committee.
Okay, so just from the linguistics of this, okay, so we have including those of the ad hoc advisory committee, which would, the ad hoc advisory committee is separate from the subcommittee, right? Because we split it in the last meeting and we voted for two? Or is the ad hoc the committee?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, it's an advisory, so it's two, is the way I understood it. The actual committee and then one is kind of a little bit to give advice, but not necessarily a voting authority. But I would add it's also open-ended right now.
Right. No, thank you. This is very helpful. I appreciate your help on this. Okay, so just bear with me for a second, Chair DeBrava, because this is important. I'm sorry that we lost Regent Trachok. I guess he thought that was the most important part of the meeting today, but I think this is really important as well. Okay, so Mr. Reynolds, including those of the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee, which would include, and then listing out the members similar to the structure of the Performance Task Force Committee, is that what you would recommend?
The board could do that today is in terms of an amendment to the mission statement and add upon on that language. I would just add if the board goes too far in fully setting forth the structure of the advisory committee, we just want to make sure it doesn't go so far that it's outside the parameters of the agendized item that the board's considering a mission statement today. So I think there's a little bit of room that the board has with the agenda item today, but not a ton. If that makes sense.
Okay. No, it Regent, does. Okay.
So Regent just, Levine, if I could add something, Regent Levine, for the discussion. We want to make sure, though, that it's still a Regent special committee, and then we can fine-tune the advisory committee, but we can't turn it into a task force necessarily because that's not on the agenda.
I don't think we're not adding a task force, Chair DeBrava, from what I just heard from our legal counsel to Enchi, is that what we're doing is clarifying what positions would absolutely need to have representation for the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee and also ensuring that they have voting power. Because right now we're basically just saying, don't worry, we're going to do a bunch of cuts, potentially very harmful, but we may or may not listen to people in the community. Honestly, that's how it's written right now, and that's what public comment and professors are telling you. So I think we do need to add a little bit of language to clarify.
Well, if I may, and Jill Reynolds, correct me if I'm wrong, if we were to add voting power to the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee, we're creating a task force as opposed to a Regent Special Committee, which we approved at the previous meeting. So I can understand the intent, but I just want to make sure we don't distort too much.
Can we hear from Joe to clarify?
Thank you, Joe Reynolds, for the record. My advice is whether the board calls it an advisory committee or a task force is not a significant distinction. That the board at the last meeting created a committee. And then a separate advisory you call it even a subcommittee to give it additional advice. And so if the board wants to clarify that, quantify it, add some more language into what that might look like and incorporate it into the mission statement, I think the board can do that. Again, whether it's called it's something both entities, the committee in an advisory committee or a task force, are subject to the open meeting law. They're subject to having public notice, agendized items. So the name, at least legally, doesn't make a difference in terms of the legal analysis.
Thank you very much. Chair DeBrava, please finish.
No, I was just going to say, Regent Levine, then maybe if you are prepared to craft an amendment to the motion that's on, we have Regent Page and McAdoo with their first and second, so maybe you can tweak it with an amendment if you're prepared to do that.
I do. I would need a little bit of assistance from Professor Newman. I'm not familiar with what positions were. You mentioned some. I didn't get to write them all down, but I think that's a really good structure for this board to consider for this. So I would say in terms of the language, and I'd like help from Joe Reynolds to make sure I'm wording this properly, is when you have in the second paragraph, including those of the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee, you could say, which would include a representative from, and then perhaps list what I hope Professor Newman doesn't mind repeating. And I'm certainly open to my colleagues with their additional thoughts on this. It was mentioned that on that task force, there was still someone who was missing from classified who perhaps should have a seat at the table, and I think Professor Newman mentioned one more. So that's the addition I have right now, Chair DeBrava. I might have a few more, but that's where I'm at right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Dr. Nauman, if you would be so kind, could you repeat your task force?
And I'm so sorry for saying your name wrong. I'm so sorry for that. Thank you.
No problem. Laura Nauman, for the record. I'm trying to make edits on the fly, and so I thank General Counsel for clarifying that the name task force versus committee doesn't really have much bearing. So I'll just first clarify what the request is, and then I'm trying to, again, on the fly, edit what the statement might look like. So I appreciate Regent Levine's advocacy on this point. And so a few things. Right now, the mission statement has an ad hoc advisory committee in it. And so, again, the breadth of what that committee looks like is currently undefined. And it sounds like that will be a new agenda item at a future meeting. In the spirit of trying to be concise in what this edit might look like, what the request is to make sure that there are seated, voted representatives representing any number of constituencies, and if there's a separate ad hoc advisory that are non-voting members, that's fine as well. So what I've tried to quickly edit in the time that we've had here, so this is for the first sentence of the second paragraph. So the current statement reads, the committee will consider the input and recommendations, blah, blah, blah. So to quickly edit this in something that would be amenable but does not yet explicate those memberships, the committee will include, so this is my edit, the committee will include, in addition to the regents appointed by the board chair, members will be selected by the chancellor in consultation with the respective constituency group and board chairman. So I tried to lift some of that language from the earlier agenda item to allow for the relevant groups to bring forth those memberships. And so I'm happy to go through and reread all of the other individuals from that task force. But it seems like right now we're just trying to create a mission statement that includes that as the charge to what types of seated individuals would be on this committee, and that at a future meeting, I'm happy to provide that list of representation. And just to restate, I did say a classified employee council member and a member from the system computing services group as well, given the charge. So if you need me to reread it, I will, but if not, I will stop there.
Regent Carter.
So I guess I would feel more comfortable taking this as a secondary motion, say, to lock us into a particular makeup of a committee and lock the chair or anybody that might be involved with that committee into that. I guess I would call the question on the one that currently is and suggest that Lisa make a secondary motion to add all that as the specific advisory committee members.
Regent Page, do you concur with Regent Carter that maybe we take this motion as you've made it and second by McAdoo, and then after that passes or fails, then we could consider a secondary motion from Regent Levine with some amendment?
Yes.
Chair DeBrava, this is Regent McAdoo. I appreciate all the discussion, but I actually would like a clarification on exactly what I would be doing a friendly amendment on. Could someone read me the motion now, please?
Thank you. And so Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds, if you could read the motion, which I believe includes the word may include the following areas that we've listed, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I think that's what the motion is, if you could straighten it out for everybody.
So just may include the following areas? Is that what you're saying?
My understanding is that the motion that's on the table that we've accepted already, that one amendment to say may include the following areas, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, Joe Reynolds, for the record, yes, that is my understanding, that there is a first and a second before the board right now to make that specific edit.
Okay, I will second that then. Thank you.
Let me call for the vote on that motion. Terry, if you do a roll call vote.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Trachuk is absent. Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Chair Dubrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Levine.
No.
Regent McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran. Regent Page.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Carrie. Regent Levine, is it fair to say, and maybe I'm misinterpreting, would you maybe make a secondary motion to describe the membership of the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee that you want included in this mission statement, or sending this charge to the committee, you want to be specific to say the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee would include these members?
No, I think what we just heard is to say that the committee, instead of will consider, the committee will include representation from, and then we can elaborate on that, on those positions during the next meeting when we vote on who you're going to recommend be on that. But representation from these different groups, and then the chancellor then works with them to identify who. That way there's guaranteed representation, because right now there's not, which is why I just voted against it, despite this conversation, and people still voted for it.
Maybe I would ask Chancellor Rose to chime in, and if I could, with that a final comment. I still didn't want to necessarily blend this into a task force. I wanted it to be a regent special committee with an ad hoc committee. And Chancellor Rose, if you wanted to weigh in.
Thank you, Chairman Dubrava. I'm sorry I'm coming in very late to the conversation, having stepped outside for some time. Can you quickly bring me up to speed on the specific question you're asking me to address? I need a bit more context. My apologies.
Oh, so the board approved to accept the preliminary draft mission statement with one amendment, and that amendment was rather important. At the last sentence of the second paragraph, reduce expenditures and include the following areas. We included may include the following areas, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
So that passed.
Okay.
And now Regent Levine and Laura Nauman have raised good points about they want some maybe more detail and possible voting membership to be included on this committee. And I was thinking that that kind of changes the character of the committee to such an extent that we've already approved that I don't know if we need to bring that back at a future consideration or if that's agendized on this. Joe Reynolds believes we do have leeway here as the agenda item is written.
I guess my recommendation to you, Mr. Chairman, would be that we consider this and bring the item back.
You know what, Chair Dubrava? It seems that the last agenda item was the most important for most people in today's meeting. Perhaps we should just break for the day and just move all the other agenda items for the next time we meet, since apparently everyone's attention span has been lost. Chair DeBrava, you're muted.
Yeah, I can't I don't know if I'll be able to remember everything I said. I don't agree with that everyone is not paying attention or about the last item was the most important. This is a very important item, too. I just have the feeling that we get it to the committee, and the committee, it being a regent special committee and not necessarily a task force. So I can appreciate how the performance pay task force worked, but this committee is different. It's a regent special committee with an advisory committee. You know, I'm going to let that stand as the mission statement with the addition of May. Laura Nauman, please.
Thank you. I just wanted to try to synthesize some of the comments that have been made and to the point of the vote on this Regent Special Committee versus calling it a task force versus a committee. Again, I look to Joe to kind of clarify what is acceptable and not acceptable, but from what I heard Joe say is that the terminology task force or committee is relatively inconsequential. I think what is important and what I hope to restate and hopefully will be understood is that we are asking our faculty are in very much in support of having membership on the committee, akin to what was done on the performance pay task force. If there is an additional ad hoc advisory committee that has non-voting rights, we think obviously the more input the better. And so my recommendation to the language of the statement as written would be to include a statement that acknowledges that there will be committee membership that includes the relevant constituencies and stakeholders. While I appreciate that there has been a vote to approve this Regent Special Committee, I will say that it was, again, done in a way that was very quick and without input in terms of the committee membership. And so I know that at all of the special meetings where this has been on the agenda, I've continued to make statements in support of having faculty have a seated vote. And so that's me making that plea again. And so if I were going to make a recommendation to the edit to the draft statement, it would be one sentence that is added before the second paragraph. And so that statement would read, in addition to regents appointed by the board chair, the committee will also include members selected by the chancellor in consultation with the respective constituency groups and the board chairman. And this is a phrase that I lifted from that performance pay task force where it described all of the people who could be included on it. I understand that we don't need to explicate all of those members today, but I think the spirit of the statement says we recognize that there are constituencies that should be seated at the table, and that is the intent of my statement and my comment. So thank you for allowing me to clarify that.
Thank you. Regent Perkins.
Okay, it takes a second to unmute. I would like to make that charge that the ad hoc committee will include stakeholders, including the ones that were mentioned by Ms. Nauman. But I don't want that list to be exclusive in case we have to. I don't want it to be like narrowed so that even if there's people that we did not think of that should be included in today's meeting, they can be included later on. Is that a possibility, or how do I make that motion, or is it necessary to make that motion, or is that just a charge, a direction I feel that the committee should take?
So, Regent Perkins, if you were thinking of making a motion, I think you've kind of changed it significantly, because I think you were suggesting that the ad hoc committee would have certain membership. And I think Dr. Nauman and Regent Levine are looking for something a little different than that, more encompassing. So Regent Levine, if I were to circle back, if you were willing to make a motion and we could see if there's a second so we could kind of proceed.
Chair DeBrava, what
yes.
motion are you recommending that I make?
Well, one that you think could garner support to make a motion incorporating Dr. Nauman's suggestions as she's illustrated here, and you could, I think, just echo or refer to her comment. I think her comment is on the record of what she's suggesting. So you could make a motion.
Yes, I tried to do that earlier. Let's do it. Let's make a motion. Thank you.
Okay. And Dr. Nauman, thank you for explaining your motion. I think both Carrie and Joe Reynolds have that motion. I need a second if we were to consider
second.
That.
Regent McMichael.
Regent McMichael, thank you.
This is Joe Reynolds for the record, Chair DeBrava. I would ask if Carrie does have a written down or can reread the motion that's on the table.
Mr. Chair, I do not have that motion written down. I was counting on Chief General Counsel Reynolds to grab that motion, or maybe I should count on Laura Nauman.
I'm happy to reread my statement if that helps.
Please, why don't you do that?
Okay, so this is to add the statement, and so this is part of the preliminary draft mission statement. First sentence before the second paragraph, so I'm adding a sentence. So that sentence reads, in addition to regents appointed by the board chair, comma, the committee will include members selected by the chancellor in consultation with the respective constituency groups and the board chairman, period. And then the existing sentence continues, the committee will, and if you want to make it more grammatically appropriate, you could say the committee will also consider the input and recommendations, blah, blah, blah.
Gary, do you have that? And if I could go to Regent Geddes.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify what the outcome is however this ends up being structured, this committee can only recommend actions to the full board, but this committee really can't. I mean, if it's going to be comprised of more than regents, we can't delegate our region authority as elected officials to vote. So this group could make recommendations to the full board for consideration, but any outcomes from this group aren't effective until the full board considers them, deliberates them, and votes on them, correct?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, yes, Regent Geddes, that is correct, that if this board has a committee that includes non-regents, It has an advisory recommendation function and can't, you know, can make recommendations to the full board, but it can't bind the full board.
Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Regent Geddes. Chancellor Rose.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Melody Rose, for the record. I just want to ask a clarifying question of Dr. Nauman and because I've stepped into this conversation a few minutes late, I want to make sure I'm understanding the intent behind the language when your statement says in consultation with the chancellor. Are you imagining then that I would recommend representative members from faculty, staff, students, and others? I just wonder if we could clarify which stakeholder groups you are imagining in that language, since they're not explicitly named.
Yes, for the record, Laura Nauman. Thank you, Chair, Chancellor Rose. I understand that you might have missed my earlier statement, and so I read a paragraph from the September 2019 quarterly meeting that explicated a long list of representatives, and just sorry to clarify, this was for the NCHE Task Force on Performance Pay Administration and Support. And so, again, I'll also recognize the context here that this was something that past Chancellor Riley had included, and this language was developed by him in consultation with then-Chair Geddes. So the paragraph lists any number of people, but I'll just kind of highlight some of the key constituency groups. So three student body members representing each institutional sector, university, state college, and community colleges, three faculty senate chairs representing each institutional sector, university, state college, and community colleges, so on and so forth. And so there is the statement that I drafted was actually taken from one of the last sentences of that agenda item, where it says the board chairman will appoint the regents, all other members will be selected by the chancellor in consultation with the respective constituency groups and the board chairman. And so, again, for the purposes of today's exercise and wanting to keep the mission statement relatively broad, but, you know, encompassing the asks related to membership, I just used that language at the end, and that I understand that there will be a new agenda item where the exact membership of said committee and or the ad hoc advisory committee would also be discussed at that time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nauman, for providing me the larger context. I appreciate it.
And Dr. Nauman, if I may ask, so if this committee then has these significant and all-important stakeholder representation with voting privilege, then depending on the number of regents appointed, which could be only a maximum of six, then if there's more stakeholder groups with voting privilege, then they would have more votes on this committee than regent representations. And then to past Chair Geddes' comment that anything the committee recommends anyway would have to go to the full board. Yeah, so I'm just kind of in practicality. I don't know how that's going to work. But we do have a motion, and we have a second, a motion from Levine and McMichael.
With all due respect, Chair DeBrava, may I say something?
Regent Levine, please.
Thank you. The way it would work is the way it sounds like many task force and ad hoc advisory committees prior in NCHE's long history have been put together. One of the things during the last meeting when we talked about this subcommittee, I believe it was Regent Geddes who said, not secret, not secret, not secret. The whole goal and intent of this is to ensure it is not secretive. That is the motive. That is the reason for why we're having this conversation. Certainly in the next meeting, we could look at who's on it. With the language right now, I'm reinforcing it to my colleagues on the board. It could go multiple ways, and you could end up not having an opportunity to really give people the representation that they deserve and should have. We have all different backgrounds on this board, from legal to medical to politics to small business owner to federal post office worker, right? We have lots of different backgrounds, and that's good. We also need the backgrounds of the presidential leadership, of the faculty members, of financial with Mr. Klinger, legal with Joe Reynolds. We need all of that with the students. We need that to be giving us in a controlled environment, which is what this ad hoc and then the subcommittee would bring. That's why we're having this conversation. If anything, it's really because Regent Geddes made that point that we don't want to be secretive. This is the direct way that you will not be having a subcommittee that is secretive, because you're going to give people a voice, which is what we should all be doing. So I just think it's really important. And this is not something new. Again, we are taking a structure that has already been in place from a different item in the past of this organization. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho, and then Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, first, this group right now, the Budget Reduction Response Committee, it will be governed by open meeting law. So I don't think that there's any secret with that in terms of what is deliberated among the group. What I'm hearing is whether these different stakeholders will have an equal vote as the members, the regent members of the committee. I think that I've got that. I think I understand that from Dr. Nauman's nod there. And I hear Chair DeBrava saying that he's concerned about the level of the voting power of those stakeholders. I would also like to point out that I feel that when we have these ad hoc committees, as we just did yesterday, as long as we have clearly delineated who will be on that committee, I think these regent committees have taken very seriously the input of these various stakeholders, as that committee yesterday did. So I don't want to diminish what has been said. Again, like I said before, as the chair of the Performance Pay Task Force, I took very seriously the input from all of the various stakeholders who were involved. And I believe that whoever is on this particular committee will do the same. I would like to see each of the stakeholder groups have that voice and be able to voice their concerns and their expertise when this group does deliberate on what, if anything, we need to eliminate, merge, innovate, whatever that is. I'm not positive. I'm not clear on the nuances of what Regent Levine is concerned about. If I missed any of that, and Chair DeBrava, if you would allow Regent Levine to clarify if I missed something in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Let me go to Regent Carter first, and then we'll go to Regent Levine.
So I'm kind of like Amy a little bit. I'm not 100% sure that I would necessarily want to give every member a vote on there, because that's how things probably won't happen. But I think that's something to consider. However, I don't think I'm prepared today to get down to the very specifics of every single group that's on here. I mean, it says key student, faculty, staff, and community stakeholders. I generally have faith that our chancellor and our chair can determine who that is, and we can always petition in that committee to add members if we needed to, but I don't know that I would necessarily support the motion as it is right now.
Thank you, Regent Carter. Regent Levine, were you able to help Regent Carvalho, or did we take a vote on the motion?
Chair DeBrava, let's move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Carrie, if you'd be so kind, we'll take a roll call vote on this motion as so described.
Okay. Chair DeBrava, can you just read the motion again?
And Carrie, if you've been able to get some of it down, or Chief Counselor Joe Reynolds, please. Chief Counsel Reynolds.
This is Joe Reynolds for the record. My understanding of the motion that's on the table is that looking at the second paragraph, that the committee Ms. Newman, correct me if I don't say this correctly, but that the committee will consider or include representatives of students, faculty, staff, as well as chancellors, members of the chancellor's cabinet, and be comprised of those individuals and key stakeholders. and that what you're looking, if I said that correctly. Ms. Newman, is that is that accurate?
I'll clarify. Lauren Ahmed for the record. So that's pretty close. I just want to make sure for everyone, you know, listening. So I want to be clear that there is the committee, the Budget Reduction Response Committee, and then in the language, there is a secondary ad hoc advisory committee. And so the spirit of the language that I presented was to ensure that there were the relevant constituencies as voting members on the committee, and whether or not there are additional ad hoc advisory members, again, I think is fine, but that the request was to make sure that those constituent groups were on the committee. So that is the ask or motion. Or
thank you, Dr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman?
Regent Page.
Yeah, can we get clarification of a legal counsel of the committee, the difference between the task force and the board committee structure, because we have board committees, as we all know, which is not designed in this case as a task force. So we get a clarification.
This is Joe Reynolds for the record. Respectfully, if I can, at least my understanding of the conversation in some of the concern is that there's a bit of a vacuum here what the board is proposing to do. In that a prior meeting, the board created a committee, but there isn't a structure of who specifically is on this committee, whether it is specific to regents, other stakeholders, faculty, students, and the exact individuals that will be on that committee. So there's, my understanding, there's a lot of unknown about that, and that the board hasn't specifically voted on that. What some of the concerns, at least in looking at the mission statement that have been raised, in at least in context of the mission statement, is wanting some language in there that clarifies who some of the key stakeholders will be on the committee. Regent Geddes stated earlier, in doing that, it does change the nature of what the committee essentially is, whether it is a committee comprised solely of regents or it is an entity that looks more like the pay performance task force, where there are regents but there's also key stakeholders. And because that is undefined at this point by the board, was my advice that there is some flexibility still on that. The board hasn't come out and said specifically this committee is going to have X number of regents or who those regents are or whether it is something that's going to look more like the performance pay task force. My understanding is from Ms. Newman and Regent Levine that they want it to look more like the performance pay task force, whereas an entity that is comprised of key stakeholders that then can come back to the full board and make recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, have a follow-up?
Yes, Regent Page.
Mr. Reynolds, my understanding, this is a board committee part of the bylaws, not a task force that Chancellor Riley created for the salary study. Is that a fair statement? Because they're not one and the same.
They are, at this point, it's at least, Joe Reynolds for the record, it's not been defined yet by the board, again, of who is on this. And the board has the authority to do that. Whether the board wants to expressly state that it is a regent committee or it is a committee of stakeholders.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yes, Regent Page.
Yeah, the committee was created by the board as a committee. So per the bylaws, we have a committee, not a task force.
Yeah, I see your point, Regent Page, and I would actually respectfully disagree a little bit with Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds that at the previous meeting and the meeting before that, at least in my commentary and as I presented it to the board, I was rather clear that this would be a regent special committee. based on our bylaws, how we create a special committee, knowing that it could only be in existence up to 1 year, and for some reason, if the board wanted this committee to continue, it would have to take necessary action and possibly create a standing committee. Again, being a regent committee. And Regent Page makes the point that a task force being created is a different route, either through the chancellor and the cabinet, and including maybe some regents on that task force. So anyway, with that, if we agreed...
Senator Brava, may I say something?
Regent Levine, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm a little confused. Perhaps I'm wrong about the CV of both you, Chair de Brava, and Regent Page. If Regent Page is an attorney, then I apologize. I don't think he is. Joe Reynolds, can you just remind me, what is your title?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, Chief General Counsel.
Thank you. And Mr. Reynolds, you just confirmed that what the board approved on this item the last time we voted on it did not specify what type of committee. Therefore, we still have an opportunity to clarify, which is why this conversation is so important. Is that right?
Joe Reynolds, for the record, that's my understanding. Correct, Regent Levy.
Thank you. Chair DeBrava,
Mr. Chair?
And Ms. Levine, if you could go ahead, and then I'll go back to you, Regent Page.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Chair DeBrava. That is decorum. I appreciate you showing me respect. I have to say that we are talking about this as if there is not even an opportunity to change certain people on this board's mind, and that the way then that you're using so that we don't have more public input on this subcommittee, which for a while I was calling secretive. I was told it wasn't secretive because we're going to clarify who's going to be on it and who's going to get representation. Here is that moment, everyone. We are trying to clarify who's going to be on it, what's the representation, and yet the same people who were saying it's not secretive are now saying, well, wait a minute, the way that we voted on it last time, you can't go back and change it. We were very specific. And now we're hearing from Joe Reynolds, who's the general counsel for ENCHI, saying, actually, you weren't that specific, which is the whole point during the last time we had this conversation. You weren't specific so that in the future, after you pass this, which I voted against, and this is exactly why, you're now telling us we can't do any of the things that we were promised last time so it wouldn't be secretive. This is why people think that there is no transparency and accountability of ENCHI. My God. That's all I have to say. Let's just vote on it and move on. You're going to vote against it anyway.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Regent Page, you have a final comment, and we'll take a vote.
I do, Chair DeBrava. Regent Levine, you don't have to be an attorney to read the bylaws, okay? And so we have to follow the bylaws. And so that's what we did. This was a committee that we approved. If you want a task force, it needs to be agendized, and we could talk about that. But the committee is appointed by the chair, not the chancellor. And so no one is saying that we're not willing to look at a task force, but we got to follow the bylaws.
Thank you, Regent Page. Carrie, if you would take a roll call vote, please.
Regent Carter.
No.
Regent Carvalho.
No.
Vice Chair Del Carlo. Chair DeBrava.
No.
Regent Geddes.
No.
Regent Hayes.
Yes.
Regent Levine.
Yes.
Regent McAdoo.
No.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran? Regent Page?
No.
Regent Perkins? Regent Perkins, are you on the line? Regent Trachok?
I'm sorry, this is Regent Perkins.
Yes, record your vote, Regent Perkins, please.
Yes. Yes.
That's six no votes. Six to four. So the motion fails.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
We will move to item eight, M3 Nevada demonstration. Vice Chancellor for Community Colleges, Nate McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through you to members of the board, please tell you there's no vote with this item. It's information only, and really excited to share with you briefly the exciting work we've done with the Me3 platform. Just a little trip down memory lane. We go back to March 6, 2020, which was BC before COVID. At the board meeting at CSN in Henderson, we had our friends from Arizona State University there talking about our partnership in general, as well as the Me3 platform itself. What you saw at that time was the Arizona version of Me3. We announced at that meeting a gift from the Rogers Foundation and the opportunity to create a Nevada version of Me3. And that's what we're here to discuss today and give you a brief demonstration of. So just as a reminder, the problem we're trying to solve with Me3 is recognizing that a number of students and adults and young folks want to go to college, and they know that, but they don't know what they want to go to college for or what they want to major in or really what they want to do for a career on the other side. Me3 is a tool that, using Holland's code, develops a RIASEC score, which is an empirical evaluation used more than any other career assessment, to be able to, in a fun way, develop a career assessment for each individual by playing a game. That game appeals in particular to younger folks, and some of you may have, many of you have probably taken a RIASEC score assessment at some point using the small bubble charts that you filled in based on what your interests are. This is a new version of that that ultimately allows an individual to figure out what careers might be interesting for them, and if in that career, where they might go within the Nevada system of higher education to be able to obtain a credential that will lead to that career. With me today from Arizona State University are Lisa Flesher and Alex Brown, both from EdPlus. We did have with us Dr. Phil Regeer, who is the CEO of EdPlus and Dean of ASU Online. He had to step off at 3:30 for another commitment, but he was with us earlier, so thank him for joining us as well. Just a couple of quick acknowledgments, Mr. Chairman. First of all, we want to thank the Rogers Foundation in particular for their generous gift to make the development of this app for Nevada a possibility. Both Beverly Rogers and Rory Reed and the entire Rogers Foundation organization and their generosity to bring this to life in Nevada. I'd also like to thank former Chancellor Riley for his work in helping make this possible as well. And we'd like to thank the staff at the institutions who helped make it a reality over the last several months since March 6 by building the data set on the back end of the tool that we'll show you today, and the marketing teams for helping with getting it onto our websites. Today, we're showing you the tool. We intend to do a more formal announcement in the coming weeks in partnership with K-12 school districts, but it is ready now to show to you. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I will share my screen and let you see the Me3 Nevada. Hopefully this works. Okay. Okay, by a nod of heads, can you see my screen? Terrific, excellent. So this is the Me3 Nevada landing page that's been built. One more logo will be added down the bottom here, which will say the supported by the Rogers Foundation. An individual user would come to this website through a link from an email, from an institutional website, from a flyer, or from their phone. It's dynamic in a way that it can be used directly on a phone. It doesn't have the need to have a direct app, but an individual can still log in and come back to it another time. Here's an introduction video that, if we clicked on this, talks to us just about what Me3 actually is. That's Lisa talking about the explanation of the program. who is here with us today, an introduction that explains how Me3 works over here. This links to our NG homepage, and so we will start here and click play now to start the game. So the first question is, indicate the highest level of education so Me3 can provide the best results for you. This is important because ultimately our institutions get this data and we want them to know what this individual student is looking for. So in this case, we're going to say we are currently in high school. So perhaps it's my senior year in high school. Now that we want to find the right matches for you, we're using career data from the U.S. Department of Labor that actually tracks back to real-time annual results available in your state. So we're going to say we're in Nevada, but each state is dynamic. So if we chose Montana, even if we wanted to go to school in Nevada but work ultimately in Montana, it would show the job data results for that as well. And I'll explain that in just a minute. We see the legal mumbo-jumbo here. Special thanks to Deputy General Counsel Zalam Bogala for his help and the ASU legal team to make this a reality. So now it says, let's build your career profile. And it's showing us what we're going to do. Look at the images. Pick the one that's most appealing to you. Play now. And it says, go with your first instinct. So I'm just going to go through this quickly, and we're going to see here what some of the results are. Now, these are career images that come up. And as you can see, the idea is that you pick one over the other. Now, neither may directly appeal to you, but the question is, which one would you find more appealing if you had to choose one? Or rather, which one do you dislike least would be another way to think about this. So as we go through this here, seeing a lot of different opportunities. And another thing to notice is if I leave my mouse over it, this is ADA friendly in that a screen reader would tell what each of these is for the purposes of accessibility. So as I move through, ultimately we pick 60 images, and along the way we can see that down the bottom it's giving us sort of a progress bar telling us what we're looking at in as far as we move along. One of the reasons there are 60 images is kind of a lot, and we want to make sure that students and would-be students know that they are making progress and they are working towards the end of the progress here. So I think if we just speed it up a little bit. Now, some of these career match pictures that you'll see come up more than one time. That's because we're trying to narrow down using a Euclidean distance matching algorithm what the actual RIASEC score for this individual is. All of that has been normed against strong RIASEC scorers by Arizona State University and is updated annually for the Me3 platform. So here we go. I've completed, and it tells me right here. It's just asking for some information right here. So we'll just put in some basic information. Change this to just... my date of birth. And a password. Of course, we use the word password. And right here is an opportunity for I would like to learn more about relevant educational opportunities. By checking this box here, NG institutions will receive information for a student who's matched with their degree programs. And that will basically be lead generation for our admissions and recruiters at our institutions to do positive outreach to an individual and ask them if they would like to talk more about admission at one of our institutions. So now we're going to continue to career results. Okay. So here on the left side, it's showing my current top careers. But I can explore my full career list here in case some of these don't particularly interest me. So as you can see here, I have ophthalmologic medical technologists, computer network architects, airfield operations specialists. So if I go down over here and start looking, I see this one and I say, you know what, I actually like this much better, computer and information systems management. I'm going to replace that one. We are trying to limit students to three, but choose from their top 25 because we want to help students narrow down in their ultimate choice of what they want to do. So if I go through here and I see we have a couple others that might be of interest to me. Perhaps I'm interested in, forest and conservation technician down here. And then maybe You know, one other one is computer network specialist. Well, we'll leave it as a computer network architect. So once I've done that, I can explore my top three here. And then, so if I hit this, now it's going to prop up and show, let's build my career path. So above each one here, I can click information. It's going to tell me some information on the right side here. It's going to give me the average national pay, the number of national job openings in a year, the average pay in Nevada, and the average job openings in Nevada per year. That all comes from the U.S. Department of Labor from ONET. It also talks about some of the skill sets that are available here as well. So that's just from clicking on information. I can do that for any of these. Let's build my career path. So here you can see, and one of the things we're going to have here that's not yet available will be a filter to filter by institution. So if I'm really just interested in institutions in the greater Clark County area, I can filter down to Nevada State College, UNLV, and CSN specifically, and see those institutions, or I can see all the institutions together. We do have a filter right here of any that are offered online. In this particular program, there aren't any, but that would show, and the little house versus the little computer is the indicator for that. So if I want to learn more about one of these, and as you can see for this career path, I could do a Bachelor of Science in Accounting and Information at UNR, a certificate at TMCC, an Information Management Bachelor at UNLV, another UNR, and Nevada State College has a Bachelor of Applied Science in Management. So for any one of these, I could learn more. So let's go ahead and click Learn More on this one. It's going to open up this right here and tell me a little bit about this program. And if I click on this, it will actually take me directly to the UNR degree program for that to actually see even further information. So ultimately, I'm going to just choose a couple here just to keep this moving. We're going to select a path. We'll do that one at UNR. On this one, I will choose University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Computer Science. And Forrest, over here, I will choose TMCC. So I've now selected my paths. And I can also go back and change career paths right up here if at any point if I'd like to. Congratulations, I've created my profile. This is now saved in the system, so I can log out and come back to this when I'm talking with an admissions counselor at any of our institutions and say, okay, this is the pathway I'm looking to get into is computer network architects or computer information system managers, and I saw that you offer this degree. If I want to take the next step, I can actually click here, and if I say, you know what, I'm really interested in the UNLV program, and click this, this will open a new tab and bring me directly to the UNLV admissions program. So the other thing is, maybe one of the careers I thought I was interested in didn't come up in the game, and I want to know a little bit more about that. I can actually search that right here. This will take me to a new field where I can start to see all of the potential careers. We have over 500 matched to our degree programs. So maybe I thought that I really wanted to be a nuclear engineer, and that didn't come up. Well, I can add a career, and it'll say, well, which one do you want to replace? I actually want to do that here. So X that out, put that right there. There we go. And now I can see more about the nuclear engineer and build a career path there from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas Mechanical Engineering Program and select that. Ultimately, if I log out, I can log back in and see all of this back here and at any point in time be able to take a look at it and visit it with a admissions counselor. So I'm going to stop sharing for a minute. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, just for 60 seconds, I'd like to ask Lisa Flesher from ASU, our partners in building this, just to say a quick word about the work we've done at this point. Lisa?
Hi. Good afternoon, all. Thank you, Nate. Since the last board meeting in March, we've been happy to partner with Nevada and create this customized version of NE3. Even through all the COVID challenges, this collaboration and these efforts have been incredible, and your teams have been such a pleasure to work with. We've seen a lot of successes with NE3 in Arizona and at ASU, and so we're super excited to see how it goes with the Nevada instance of NE3. So thank you for your time.
With that, Mr. Chairman, just want to thank the Rogers Foundation again and all the institutions, and thank you as a board for your support of this. We're very excited about this tool and be happy to entertain any questions or comments, if there are any, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chancellor McKinnon, thank you for your presentation and putting this together with the Nevada perspective. And also a special thanks to the Rogers Foundation for their assistance and help with getting this. I'm going to go to Regent Page, please.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. My question is around the marketing plan to the Rogers Foundation, to Bev Rogers and Roy Reed. They were so gracious to step up with the donation toward this project, and when we did agree to that, we talked about a marketing plan and making sure they're involved in this. So I would like to make sure that that gets taken care of.
Vice Chancellor McKinnon, did you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Regent Page. I know that the Chancellor Rose and I have been in conversation about that and are planning on how the announcement will be rolled out to, in particular, students in high school over the next several weeks. So very much appreciate you bringing that up.
I might call on Chancellor Rose if she wanted to add.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava, and I just want to say thank you very much to Vice Chancellor McKinnon. This has been a wonderful effort by the two institutions, really shows the power of collaboration across systems, and very much appreciate the effort. To answer the prior question, I am scheduled with Mr. Reed for a phone call next week. The topics of our conversations are going to be twofold. One is a collaborative announcement to draw attention to this good work and make sure that our communities are aware of its availability, which I think is very important. And, of course, we have to acknowledge that when this partnership was imagined and launched under Chancellor Riley's good leadership, that was before COVID, and the world of press conferences and marketing has dramatically changed. So I'm looking forward to that call with Mr. Reed, both to discuss the announcement itself, but also to revisit the marketing plan to make sure that it is reflective of the intent of the donor, as well as reflective of our changed circumstances under COVID. So happy to give you an update about that in October at my chancellor's report at that time. I'll have more information.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. And again, thank you, Vice Chancellor Nate McKinnon, for the presentation.
Chair DeBrava?
Yes, that is who.
This is Dr. Solis at Western.
Yes, Dr. Solis. President Solis, go ahead, please.
Chair DeBrava, Chancellor Rose, I just wanted to say that this is a really great tool. We're looking forward to it at Western. You know, one of the things that we are hopeful will happen with this tool is that students take less time to kind of figure out what they're going to be doing in college. You know, when we work with students directly, that's the question of the day, especially our freshmen. A lot of them don't really have that sense of what they're going to get into. And having this tool is something that we're looking forward to, not only to giving the students an opportunity to work with it, but more importantly, we want to monitor how many hours it's actually taking to complete, because even though they're successful, they're jumping around in their search of what they're going to be doing in their academic career path. So we're excited on two fronts as a tool for students, and hopefully this will bring down the number of attempted hours students take. So I just wanted to say thanks to the system, to the Regents, the Chancellor, and Vice Chancellor McKinnon for giving our tools and the system or the institutions this access to this really impressive tool.
Thank you, President Solis. We are now going to move to item 9.
New Regent McMichael.
Regent McMichael, you have comments in item 8, please.
Yes. Is there a version of this tool available to our sight-challenged students?
Nate McKinnon, please.
Thanks, Vice Chancellor. Actually, since the tool's been developed by ASU, I'd like to defer to Lisa Flesher to answer the question.
Yes, great question. So all of the imagery on the back end is tagged, and it is already responsive for visually impaired students, so that feature is available and will be able to be utilized.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may add just one additional, this question came up, a similar question about ensuring accessibility and the compliance required under the Americans with Disability Act for all of our websites. And it is actually part of our agreement with ASU that it maintains the highest standards for that, and are excited to report that they've met that.
Excellent. Very good work. Thank you, everybody. We will now go to Item 9, new business. Seeing no new business.
Regent DeBrava, this is Lisa.
Regent Levine, please.
Yes. Not sure if I'm allowed to ask you questions, but agenda item 6. Most of us were under the impression that was going to be on the agenda today. I believe it's number 6, about the operating budget.
Yes, Regent Levine, so I did pull that during my chair's report, so it's not going to be discussed today. We think it'll be brought back at a future meeting.
Well, for new business, I'd like it to be brought back at the next meeting. That's really important. That was probably one of the top priorities of today's meeting, and no one knew it was going to be taken off except you and apparently a few others. So that's my new business. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Before we go to public comment, I just want to thank the board staff and SES for putting the meeting together and all the work that they do. So thanks to them. Item 10, public comment. Carrie, any public comment, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There's one public comment that came in during the meeting. It is from Brent Mullenix, M-U-L-L-E-N-I-X. The choice for former Governor Brian Sandoval to become the president of an academic institution is somewhat appalling. He has zero experience in higher education and has actively worked to cut programs in the arts and in mathematics over his tenure as a politician in public office. It would not be an understatement to describe this as a negligent decision to elect someone who sees education as a burden financially when it is the future of this state and nation. Education, especially higher education, is critical to the development of a strong and thriving community that builds a country to be a force on the international stage. And putting someone like Brian Sandoval in office with, again, zero experience and expressed disinterest in supporting programs that are fundamental to a broad and well-rounded education is more absurd than Samuel Beckett's works. This decision, also being made and announced on September 16th, the day after you asked for comments by 4 p.m. on September 15th, is by and far the most shocking aspect of this ordeal. It is evident by this decision that you are aware that there would be public backlash from the community about this and that you are not working in the best interest of your students and of the future of the state or nation. Do you really want a candidate who left their former place of employment in April, assuming they would be handed this kind of job? This kind of machine politics is exactly the kind of corruption that leads to disinformation and suppression of education that I learned from this institution in the books Syndromes of Corruption by Michael Johnston and Corruption, What Everyone Needs to Know by Ray Fissman. How can you say this man, Brian Sandoval, who sought to cut educational programs, is more qualified in the field of higher education than those candidates that have worked in the field? It is unfair and unjust to the people whom you choose to serve. I urge you as a recent graduate to consider this before making your decision. I would see myself to be proud to have graduated from somewhere that does not seek to better their students in every way possible, seeing as they are the future of this country. That concludes the public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Carrie. No further public comment. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.